So last week, we kind of ended our lesson in the middle, and we began to look at the parable that we find in Luke chapter 16. So if you want to turn to Luke chapter 16, this is where Jesus was telling his disciples, basically, this next section of parables that tend to deal with eternity, what we should be doing now in light of eternity. Last week, as we were going through this, we ran out of time. We went through the exposition of the actual parable, but we didn't get a chance to unpack the teaching that came behind the parable. For some of you that weren't here last week, and for some of you that were here last week and were half asleep, we'll do a little review for you. So Christ has moved through Luke, through this Gospel of Luke, from teaching his disciples how to love God, how to pray, how to draw close to God. He's gone through the section where he warns them that the time is short, so they need to be ready. Now is the time to repent and believe, be found wise and faithful. He warns them not to live as the world does, living for themselves, for status, just living for this life. He teaches them to seek the kingdom, to love God, to live for Christ, to take up their cross, to count the cost, to follow Jesus. This has kind of been this teaching that's been leading up from pretty much ever since he turned his face towards Jerusalem, knowing that the cross looms. This is the teaching that's kind of growing in urgency as he moves closer and closer to Jerusalem. Then we came to the parables where he shows how our God rejoices and delights in saving sinners, finding and rescuing the lost, bringing the wanderers home. And now he moves into this set of parables that express, in light of this, how then should we live? Kingdom living. What should our priorities be? What should be the thing that makes our hearts rejoice? What should be the thing that gives us great delight? Where should we invest our time? Where should we invest our resources? In these last set of parables, he shows us how our God rejoices and delights. We know what heaven rejoices and delights in, don't we? The last three verses is that heaven delights in bringing wanderers home, saving the lost. So in this, how should we live? Our priorities, the way in which we should live now in light of eternity, in love with our God. That's worth repeating. It's one of those things for those of you that are taking notes. In light of eternity, in love of our God, how do we live? Well, that's what we're going to open up. And so let's turn to chapter 16 of Luke, beginning with verse 1. He also said to the disciples, there was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and he said to him, what is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager. And the manager said to himself, what shall I do? Since my master is taking this management away from me, I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I've decided what to do, so that when I'm removed from management, people may receive me into their houses. So summoning the master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, how much do you owe my master? He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write 80. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much. And one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. The Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all these things, and they ridiculed him. And he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is exalted among men is an abomination, in the sight of God. So, to catch up to speed, just to open up this parable once more for us, I'll go quickly through what is this parable's exposition. It's a rich man who had a manager, and this rich man learns that the manager was being wasteful with the rich man's wealth. He was entrusted with his master's resources, and he was supposed to use them for the master's will, but instead, he'd been wasteful. He'd been careless with them. So the master confronts him, and then he basically lets him go, right, from the work. He basically tells him, you can no longer be manager, and he gives him just a little bit of time to turn over the accounts. The wasteful manager now is aware of the situation. All of a sudden, now he starts thinking. Now he starts to worry about his future. And the questions he asks himself, what should I do? What will I eat? Where will I live? How can I get people to treat me well once this is over? As he's worrying about this, he says, I'm too weak to be a laborer. No one's going to hire me as a laborer. I'm too proud to be a beggar. What am I going to do? And as he starts thinking and planning, an idea comes to him. I still have access to the resources now. And so he decides to put to work, you know, to invest these resources he still has access to for future needs. He calls in the master's debtors and he cuts deals with each of them. You know, we have two examples, but understand there was a lot of debtors. These are just two of many. And so the first one that we have an example of is basically this guy has a huge amount of debt, 100 measures of oil. And so he tells him, change the bill to 50 measures of oil. That's 2 to 3 years of salary. He just writes off. To another, he takes 20 measures of wheat off of the bill. That's like 6 months of salary. What's he doing? He's making friends with these debtors. These debtors are really going to like him. And so once he gets sacked from this job, afterwards, these are going to be folks that are going to be somewhat indebted to him. These are going to be folks that are going to be happy to see him, folks that will open their homes to him. These are folks that are appreciating the fact that he used his resources now to make friends later. They're going to be favorably disposed towards him. The Bible uses the term, they will receive him. The idea is they will receive him later. The master surprises us with his response. The master commends this manager. He gives him credit. Right? You got to give him credit. And he points out, right, he's not giving him commendation for his stewardship. And he's not giving him commendation for his dishonesty. He's giving him commendation for one thing only, and it's his shrewdness. His thinking on his feet, his clever, sharp focus on using what he has now for the future. This is the trait that he commends because this is the trait that Jesus uses in his parable to bring to us to say, I wish this was your trait. This master goes on to say that this is sorely lacking, right, in God's people. He says, for I tell you, the sons of this world, worldly folks, are more shrewd. They're more clear thinking. They're more sharp-witted in dealing with their own generation. These people, they know how to make their own way. They take care of their resources for themselves. They work for their future. They're shrewd with their money. They're constantly at work to take care of themselves for the future. They do that much better than the sons of light. Who are the sons of light? These are the people who fear God. These are the ones who are aware that there is a day of reckoning coming. There is a future life that we should be planning for. And so we get this parable. The idea is, it's like, I wish you would have this trait. He saw that it was good to use his resources now to prepare for his future later. I wish you Christians, I wish you believers, I wish you children of light would do the same. Start thinking about using your resources now for the life later. Worldly people are more clever in using their resources for their own future than godly people in using their resources for theirs. Simplify it again. Worldly people are clever with their money. They use it for what is most important to them. Godly people often aren't shrewd with how they use their money for what should be most important to them. This wasteful, dishonest manager was putting his current resources to work for the gain in his next life. And these people will receive him in their homes gladly. That's what the master is commending. That picture of thinking now about then, putting to work now what's going to be utilized then. And so he says, and I tell you, there's an admonition now that Jesus, it turns, Jesus is now saying to his disciples, now that you've heard this parable, and this is the thing that's hard for a lot of folks to grab hold of, he says, I tell you, this is an admonition, this is an instruction, this is advice and direction coming straight from Jesus to his disciples. He says, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth so that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. That's hard at face value when we look at that. But what's he really saying in light of this parable? He's saying, I want you to strengthen this commendable trait in yourselves. Make friends for yourselves, right? The inference is friends in your next life. Everlasting friends. Friends that you'll have in heaven. By means of unrighteous wealth. Remember last week, what's unrighteous wealth? It's worldly riches. It's the resources you have now. So that when it fails, and guess what, folks? The resources you have now will fail. You can't take any of it with you. All of the stuff that's in your wallet and in your bank account has no value whatsoever there. He's saying, so this money, this resource that fails, when it fails, they may receive you in eternal dwellings, these everlasting friends, these citizens of heaven. Bottom line, what's he saying? Like the manager in this one area, this one trait, develop this trait in yourself. Use your resources now to invest in the next life. Last week, the term I used was put your earthly wealth to heavenly use. Simple way of looking at this. Earthly wealth to heavenly use. Be smart today with what you have. Invest in things that matter for eternity. Do you remember the question that I kind of left you with last week? The last thing that was kind of sitting that we left open? 64,000 years from now, as you look back upon this small 80-year window of life that you spent here on earth at this time, think about what did you invest in then that still has value now. Do we know what has value in heaven through the ages? How much time do we spend thinking about that? What is it that actually will retain its value into eternity? We know from the last set of parables, don't we, a little bit? The lost found, one sinner that repents, the dead given life. This is the stuff that heaven rejoices at. This is the best use of our earthly wealth, the gospel. Getting the message of Christ out, seeing people saved, heavenly friends there who were purchased here. People that were invested in here. You know what's interesting is this week, as I was kind of bringing the lesson from last week to this week, I got an email from Carolyn Ford. And I started thinking about Carolyn Ford, and I started thinking about this church's investment in Carolyn Ford over the years. Almost 30 years we've supported this missionary who's been in Ethiopia translating scriptures into several dialects in the Ethiopian language. She's got 3 to 4 Bibles already translated, already in the hands of people that are being taught, whole people groups. And now Tika, which is one of the folks that was helping her to translate one, has learned the software and is now helping to translate another language for another people group. And you start thinking about this, saying, how many Ethiopians are we going to see in heaven that are going to come up to us, right, and say, do you know why I'm here? I got to learn about Christ and his work for me through the investment that you made in Carolyn Ford and in Tika and in those Bibles. That Bible was the Bible that I used. That was the Bible that the guy who led me to Christ used, and that's the Bible that I read from and grew from. I'm here partly because of the investment that you made. Beloved, that's a pretty good investment. That's a pretty good return on investment, isn't it? Remember what Jesus said back in chapter 12? Go back to chapter 12, verse 32. He says, fear not, little flock, for it's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail. What is that treasure in the heavens that does not fail? I'll tell you, I think it's people like these Ethiopians. I think it's people that we're going to see there. Where no thief approaches and no moth destroys, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So that was the parable. And so now we come to the teaching that Christ brings from it. Verse 10, chapter 16. One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much. And one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. I will tell you, beloved, that one of the most common responses I've heard from young people that I'm counseling, whether they be young single people, young people about to get married, young marrieds, a lot of the folks that I counsel, and we start talking about resources, we talk about how we manage our resources. These folks that are just starting out, so often they give a reason why they don't tithe or why they don't give to the work of the Lord, missions, all these different things. You know what the reason is? I don't make enough, right? What does God care? I'll use Jake. I row for a living, right? I can bring in 40 bucks from a row, and so surely God doesn't care about $4 or $5 in the offering plate. So often we hear this, right? And when I make more, I'll give more. When I have more, then I'll help more. We always tend to think that right now I just have too many debts, I have too many bills to pay, and there's always something more important, there's always something more pressing. So once I get past that, then you'll see me. I'll be a cheerful giver. I'll be one of these great givers in the Bible. And it's almost like God needs their money. Let me be honest with you this morning. God doesn't need your money. He lets you give. He lets you participate in the things that are going on in the church and in the work. He hopes that you invest in the things that delight him, the things that have lasting value. But the problem is we put such a high value on the dollars that we have here that we don't see it in his light. He's not looking at your billfold. He's not looking at your retirement account. He's looking at your heart. He's looking at your heart. And so he gives this truth here, right? The problem that we have with this logic, if I made more, I would give more. If I had more, I would invest more. The problem is Jesus says here that that's not true. Our Savior says that's not true. He was saying it to them at that time, and he's saying it to us this morning. Here then is the truth that he brings forward. If you aren't being faithful with the little, you won't be faithful with the much. If you're being dishonest with the little bit that you have, you're going to be dishonest when you have more. Because there's patterns that develop. There's a heart issue that's at stake here. It isn't about the amount. Our newest member, Kenneth, read scripture for us this morning. And in that passage, if you want to kind of look to it, I'm not going to be quoting directly from it, but we're going to be going into this parable more because Luke takes this same parable in parallel later. But I want you to see or to think about one thing that comes out of this parable of the talents, Matthew 25, verses 14 to 30. I just want you to focus today on a couple of points. First, did you notice that the servants that were giving the different talents were entrusted with different amounts? Some were entrusted with 5, some were entrusted with 2, some were entrusted with 1. And what was it dependent upon? Their ability, capacity. God knows how well we handle the stuff he gives us. So some were given 5, some were given 2, some were given 1. What you're going to find in the parable as we go into it much more deeply is it really isn't about the amount. We focus on the amount, don't we? We want to look at the 5. And what do we find? One gets 5, one gets 2, one gets 1. And the one who has 5, he put it to good use and he made 5 more. The one who had 2 put it to good use and he made 2 more. The one with 1 didn't put it to good use. And he still only had 1. And so that 1 was taken away from him and it was given to the one that now had 10. And so oftentimes we read that parable and go, that's not fair. The guy that had 10 already has 10. You would think the guy that had 10 should give 2 to the guy who had 1. I don't want to go too deep into this parable, but I want you to see one thing. There was an expectation for the guy who had been given one. You see that? What was the expectation? That he would put it to good use. He was rebuked for not doing so. You didn't do your job. I gave you one. I wanted you to use it in a specific way, and you didn't do it. It was taken from him, and then he was put out. But also, look at the reward system. So the one with five, who made five more, was rewarded. Remember what he was rewarded? Well done, good and faithful servant. Come on in. You know, some of us read that parable, and we think that he was also rewarded with the gains. He had five more. You know what you forget when you think that way? It wasn't his. He was working for the master. If he had had 50 and got 50 more, it wasn't his. He was just doing his job. He did a good job. He used it in the master's will. His job was to manage it well. He was to manage his master's wealth in the way that his master wanted his wealth to be managed, and he did so, and it pleased the master. Look at the one with two, who made two more. What was his reward? Same as the guy that had five who made five. It isn't about the amount. It's the fact that the guy who had two had a job to do. I want you to follow my instructions. I want you to use these two, and I want you to manage them well. He did. His reward, the guy who managed two, was the same to the guy who managed five. Well done, good and faithful servant. Come on in. They did the work entrusted to them. Do you see, beloved, this morning that God entrusts us with different amounts? Have you ever noticed that? Even in the church, you can look around. Some of you are folks that have been entrusted with five. Some of you have been entrusted with two. Some of you have been entrusted with one, maybe half of one. You've been given a job to do with that half of one, that two, that five. Right? The heart is, put it to good use. Put it to the master's use. God entrusts it because it's his. We've got to remember that this is his. It doesn't matter if you've been given 100 and you make 100 more. The reward is for a job well done. The reward is the same. The expectation is the same. And so Jesus tells us, were you faithful with what was entrusted to you for his use? Or were you dishonest with it? Were you wasteful with it? Did you forget it was his? Did you not know how he wanted it managed? Beloved, now you do. You're all accountable now. Sorry. You know, when I look at it this way and I start to see that parable that way, going, wow, 5-2, I always wanted to be the guy with five. I didn't want to be the guy with one. But when I realize I'm going to be graded on how I manage it versus how much I make of it, you know what the easier job is? What's the easier job? It's the one, isn't it? This is one of the principles that I share with some of the young folks. I tell them it's easier to manage the one than the five. Start now while it's easy. Develop godly patterns now in your life, good Christian habits. Trust me, when you're given 10% of your 10,000, it may hurt a lot. But trust me, if you don't do it and you wait till you're making 100,000, trying to all of a sudden start in the middle of your life, that's a huge amount. Trust me, it'll be way harder later. And if you're dishonest now, when you have just a little bit, when it's fairly easy, oh, it's going to be impossible later when you have a lot. This isn't just common sense. This is what Jesus is telling us. Understand early. It isn't yours. It's his. He's entrusted much or little to you to use for his purposes, for your good, for his glory. Now look at what he says next in verse 11. If then you've not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? Ouch. Look at this. So maybe you haven't been faithful with the resources entrusted to you. Maybe I'm not talking to the young ones anymore. Maybe I'm talking to some of the middle age or some of the older folks, right? Maybe you haven't been faithful with the resources entrusted to you with this unrighteous wealth. What is that? We sometimes get hung up on this term, unrighteous wealth. I want you to understand what that is. That's worldly wealth, right? That's worldly revenue. It's your earthly money, it's your earthly property, it's your time, it's your talent, it's your wages, it's your wealth, it's your property, it's all the resources you have now that will not make it through the fire. Right? All the stuff that you cannot take with you, that's all of the stuff that's concluded in this unrighteous wealth. All the stuff that you know that you can't take with you, that is this world's wealth. And Christ tells us, if you've been unfaithful with that little bit, who will entrust you with the true riches? What are the true riches? Right? Do you see what he's doing here? Little to much. Look at how he pictures this, small to larger. Faithful with a little, faithful with the much. He's taking you smaller to bigger, less significant to more significant. And what is the less significant thing? Your wealth, your resources. Because the true riches are the greater. Heavenly riches, those things that last, treasure stores in heaven, the real stuff, the stuff that's still going to have value 64,000 years from now. Side note, our worldly wealth is the lesser, right? If we buy into that, we kind of go, wow, my worldly wealth is less than the true riches that have eternal value. And I started thinking about how much time do I spend on my worldly wealth, this unrighteous riches, right? How much do I spend time in obtaining it, protecting it, amassing it, spending it, worrying about it, mishandling it, wasting it, stealing it for our own uses, consumed with this world's paltry wealth? How many of us could sit in a room and talk one to another and kind of confess to each other, yeah, I probably spent too much time, spent a lot of my life in this process? Second question then is like it then. How much time do you spend considering the heavenly value treasure? How much time do we spend on how can I best invest what I have now for his purposes? Where best to invest this for Christ's sake? Where can I get a really good eternal return on investment? How much time do we spend in that? You might say, well, some, but put it next to how much time do you spend managing all of the other stuff, and you're going to find a huge difference, aren't you? Huge difference. That's what this whole parable is saying. We don't do this very well. The people of this world take better care of their wealth for their retirement planning than the Christians do with their eternity planning. You don't think about it much. You don't put a whole lot of brain power to this. You're not clever. You're not shrewd. And so you can kind of expect what's coming in the next verse, verse 12. And if you have not been faithful with that which is not yours, who will give you that which is your own? Right? If you don't use his money for his purposes now, gosh, what would you do with your own? Right? Because we have some sort of accountability. Most of us realize there's going to be a day of accounting. Most of us realize that there's going to come a time when the Lord is going to say, how did you use your time? How did you use your resources? How did you spend the talents that I gave you? Right? In the parable of the talents, there is this time where they haven't given a reckoning. Wow, you used them well. Come on in. Wow, you used them well. Come on in. Oh, what a pity. Take what you have, give it to him, and stay out. There's a reckoning coming, and so most of us that realize there's a reckoning coming, the idea here is, if you know there's a reckoning coming, and you used his money for other purposes, what would you have done with your own? How much more would you waste knowing that there was no reckoning? Knowing that there was no accountability? You know, that accountability keeps us at least kind of in the tracks sometimes. Are you tracking with what the Lord is saying? Even with a little, be faithful. With what you've been entrusted, be faithful. You know. Recently I heard this really cool little story. It wasn't directly attached to this, but I think it has value for us. There's an instructor who was talking of a mother's council, and there was a mother of a prince who was going to come into his kingdom, and then there was a mother that was in poverty with a son that was not going to have anything, and the different counsels that these mothers gave to their son. You ever think about that? There would be different counsel that a mother would give to her son. The one I want you to focus on is the counsel that this mother of the prince would give to her son. And he brought out the idea that the prince has been born into a great wealth with great property, and with that wealth and property comes great responsibility because he's been entrusted with a lot. He's been entrusted with much. And this mother might explain to him that temporal riches are a small thing, honey. The rest of the world is always constantly striving after dollars, or constantly striving after salaries, or constantly working after the small stuff. Don't do that. It's all temporal. What she would tell her son is that money is just a tool, right? For use in managing and building the kingdom, which is yours. This kingdom. So put it to good use. Don't use the money for yourself. Use it for the kingdom. Because the kingdom is your inheritance. You don't need to strive after it. You don't need to worry over it. You don't need to crave it. You don't need to hoard it. Don't use it for temporal appetites. Put it to work. Because you're an heir of the kingdom. All that is here is already yours. You know, when I read that, I started thinking about when we were really, really poor and in debt, when we were first married, man, I would walk through a mall and I wanted everything I saw. Anyone ever have that feeling? I didn't have the money to buy it, so I wanted everything. Then I started getting some savings in the bank. Then I had the ability that if I really wanted it, I could get it. And you know what I found? I didn't really need it. I had everything. And so I stopped craving after all of this stuff because I was in possession of something more. I think that this is what she's talking about, right? And this difference between these two moms is this poor mom is teaching her child how to spend it. And this mother of the prince is teaching her son how to use it. It's a tool. There's a difference. And then I started thinking about what Scripture tells us. Seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you. Your Father in heaven knows what you need, right? We're joint heirs with Christ. What are we joint heirs of? Vast riches, eternal riches. We're now children of God, citizens of heaven, a royal priesthood. We're the people that used to not be a people, but now we are a people. We're children. We've been adopted by the King. So what do you need? Why are you striving after all of this stuff? Why are you so worried about your retirement? Why are you so worried about all these different things? And it's not to say, this isn't a message to kind of say, stop planning for retirement, stop saving for, you know, that's not what this says. It says, where is your priority? You're not living for your retirement. I see too many old folks who, once they hit retirement, they just hope their money lasts out right up to the point where they die. My dad always said he wanted to write a bad check right before he went into the grave. Right? That was kind of his idea, was he wanted to have enough that would take him all the way to the end. Are you living for that? Because guess what, beloved? If you're a believer in Jesus Christ, that isn't the end. And you're living for the wrong thing. We're living for the next life. This whole entire teaching, this whole area, this whole next set of parables is start living for the next life. Start letting heaven and your heavenly citizenship and what awaits you start impacting what you're doing now. All of us that are old, we look back and we go, man, this life is a lot of vanity, right? Solomon the wisest, this life, we spent tons of money. Was that fulfilling? Right? We wasted a lot of money. We've done a lot of things. We can show the pictures. We can show the t-shirts. We got a lot of things that we've accumulated to look and point back to. But if we're honest with each other, we look at it and we say, how much value does it really have? How fulfilling is it really? But I'll tell you, some of the good things that we've done in the past, it's like, you know, as I've been beating myself up over the last 2 weeks going through this, because I will tell you, your pastor gets convicted the same way you do. There have been those times. There's believers in Siawi that some of my money helped, right? There's believers in Ethiopia that I have a little bit of investment in. And all of a sudden, you start looking at the money that I've put into different things. All the other money, you can kind of go, well, not so good. But boy, when I think of those things, that was money well spent. That was good stuff. That's stuff that will last. Beloved, we're rich in Christ. Our future is secure, so we need to start using what we have here to build value there. Think what Jesus is saying very clearly. If you're unfaithful with a little, who's going to entrust you with more? Do you know what his inference answer is? No one. That's what he's inferring. If you're unfaithful with a little, no one's going to entrust you with more. If you're unfaithful with that which belongs to someone else, who's going to give you stuff for your own? No one. The inference he's telling you, no one. So we can understand clearly then his admonition. Be faithful even with a little, so that you may be entrusted with more. Be faithful with another's, so that you may be given your own. And then lastly, this truth to know and understand and accept. A truth that we should just hold fast to. No servant can serve two masters. He'll hate one and love the other, which is not good service to at least one of them. He'll be devoted to one and despise the other, not good service to at least one of them. Hate and love, no matter what, one gets loved more, one gets loved less. No matter what, one gets priority over the other, one gets valued over the other, one gets heart service and one gets lip service. People through the ages have tried. They've made themselves believe that they could somehow do this. I can still love my money and love God. I don't know if they really read this book to realize that our God's been fairly clear about the fact that he requires wholeheartedness, single-mindedness. Our God believes that he is worthy of it. Our God believes that he is deserving of it. And our God, I will tell you, will have it that way. One way or the other. Beloved, you cannot serve God and money. Christ tells us here, it's impossible. One writer wrote, you'll either use your money to serve your God, or you will use your God to serve your money. So many people want to serve God with some of their money and serve themselves with the rest of it. I remind you again, this isn't teaching that you must go liquidate all that you have and give it all to the poor to prove that you have a love for God. That's not what this teaching is. Although a glance through the parable of the rich young ruler may cause you to stop and consider where your heart is. Here, I want you to stay focused on the parable, the point that Jesus is making. How to live in light of the kingdom coming. Be more shrewd with your earthly resources. That's the bottom line of this message. Use what you have been entrusted with now for heavenly use. Be faithful, even if it isn't much. Be faithful. Remember that it's not yours. Love God, not money. Devote yourself to his purposes, not the purpose of this world, not your purposes. And then remember this, that the world's wealth, no matter how much you have in your 401k, no matter how much your house is worth on the latest Zillow report, it's a small thing. It's the lesser thing compared with the true riches that are stored up in heaven that will have value throughout eternity. We're heirs to the kingdom, children of God. So this morning I leave this section, and trust me, I wish that I could say you're not going to get more teaching like this, but there's about four or five more parables we're going to hit that are just very similar to this. And the point of them is this, put your treasure where your heart is. And if you find your treasure in the wrong place, that means your heart's in the wrong place. Get your heart in the right place so that your treasure will follow it. Let your heart be wholly his. The reaction of those who were not in the right place, whose hearts were somewhere else, you can see it in 14 and 15. This teaching was ridiculous to the Pharisees. Right? They ridiculed them. That means they thought it was ridiculous. Why? It tells us because they loved money. And if you love one, you're going to hate the other. It's easy to see where their heart was, right? This is hard teaching. It's ridiculous to most. Even this section, it says it's contrary to what is exalted among men. If you share this teaching with all of your friends at work and everything else, you're going to go, that's crazy talk. Because that's completely opposite of what's exalted in the world. But it says, our Savior tells us right here in this verse, what is exalted here in the world is abominable there. It's an abomination in the sight of God. He's not like us. He wants us to invest in the right things. That's where we're going to pick it up.